This video is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community for creative people where millions get to explore together. Skillshare's got thousands of classes. As artists, you're going to love discovering topics in fine art, illustration, and more. Lots of Skillshare classes are under 60 minutes. With short lessons, you can fit them into the busiest of schedules. At ArtProf, we produce many video tutorials that we edit with Adobe Premiere. So I was really excited to find advanced video editing with Adobe Premiere Pro 2020. I really enjoyed this class because I was able to stretch my video editing skills well beyond the basics. I had the chance to get insight on very in-depth details that had escaped me in the past. And I know that I will greatly continue to benefit from the many skills that I gained. Skillshare is also super affordable, and annual subscription is less than $10 a month. The first 1,000 of our subscribers to click the link in the description will get 30% off an annual premium membership so you can explore your creativity. Even if you've already had a free trial of Skillshare, you can still take advantage of this offer to get a full year of unlimited learning and creative exploration. Hello, everybody. Today, we are talking about kitsch art. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't afford an art class, we've got everything you need here at ArtProf: critiques, tutorials, and professional development. Deep Dee and I are going to get started by just talking about what is kitsch, because I think that it's not always super clear. So we're going to give you some ideas about it, and then we're going to give you our, quote, good picks and bad picks of kitsch art. So Deep Dee, in a nutshell, how would you define what kitsch art is?
I guess when I think of kitsch, the first thing that comes to mind is that it's classified as quote unquote bad art, or kind of like in bad taste, cliche, things that people who don't have high taste gravitate towards. And a lot of times it leans towards using things that are very iconic, like Disney characters or cute animals, and things that are like sentimental to people. Just stuff that you know it's almost like clickbaity, things that you know people are going to like. And therefore it's not really like high taste. How would you define it, Clara?
I think I would define it actually as a pejorative, that oftentimes when some work of art is labeled kitsch, that's not generally used as a compliment most of the time. I think it usually is meant almost like an insult to say, hey, this work of art is not well valued because it's kitsch. So that's, I think, an important distinction to make, that I guess it's a descriptive word to say this type of art, but I think that negativity is definitely part of kitsch. Why do you think it's seen as a pejorative?
I guess because it's so common. You know, it's so liked by so many people. It's honestly like I sometimes think about it like living in New York, it's like fashion. Like, you know, if everyone is into this one thing, a true New Yorker who is into fashion wouldn't be into that thing because they know better or they have more exposure. So I think that's why it's negative, is because it's so commonly liked. Like, I think kitsch is so subjective because there are things that are kitsch that I really like. And really, I think it's very, very subjective. And a lot of times, because people like it, it then turns kitsch. It's really kind of mind-boggling to me.
Tell us in the chat, what is your definition of kitsch, or what does kitsch remind you of? Because it's really interesting, Deep Dee. We have a lot of memories that people have here with kitsch. Like Jane says, I have Disney Kincaid canvases in my kids' rooms. I still think they're gorgeous. And Seven Angelic says, when I was a kid, I would cut Thomas Kincaid pictures out of magazines and collage them together because of the pretty colors. And so I feel like everybody has a kitsch story. It definitely is an art form that has hit everybody at some point, whereas I don't think you can say that about museum shows at the Whitney in New York City.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this stream we did on cliches really goes hand in hand with what we're talking about with kitsch, because like what we talked about in the stream with cliches is that like a lot of times things are cliche just because of how common they are and how loved they are and how, you know, how people gravitate towards them. And I think that you know, a lot of times in kitsch work, you see cliches, and kitsch work can be cliche. So I think it's all honestly in the same world, and can, again, and I'll say it again and again, it is super subjective.
Yeah. And you have people like Thomas Kincaid and Bob Ross. I think they're maybe the superstars of the kitsch art world who are well known, but there's some pieces that we're going to look at today that I sort of say, really? That's kitsch? Which is how I feel about this piece by Vladimir Tretyakov. I looked at this piece online because I Googled kitsch art to see what popped up. And when I saw this, I was like, oh, this is not really what comes to mind when I think about kitsch. What do you think?
I agree. That's my gut feeling when I saw this piece too, because I think with kitsch, I'm used to seeing like puppies or a beautiful landscape or a Disney character or something. And then this feels like outside of that box. But I suppose when I was reading about this piece that it honestly became kitsch, and this artist is honestly, I've read that he's deemed as like the king of kitsch, but I think he became that because this piece was so globally popular and so many millions of prints got sold that it then became this household image and therefore became kitsch. I mean, Clara, honestly, when I looked at this piece at first, I was just kind of like, we're a little weirded out by the subject matter and like who this man is in relationship to this, I guess, Chinese girl. And what, you know, I had a lot of questions about it in the terms of like cultural appropriation or culturally rather than thinking about it in the terms of kitsch. Did you have that same reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at it and I was thinking, well, it seems because it's titled Chinese Girl that maybe the artist is objectifying this figure. And if you look up Vladimir Tretyakov's paintings, he has a lot of paintings of females who are not Western European culture, and starts to make me think, okay, this is him trying to make these women exotic. So that part of it, I definitely saw that before I saw kitsch. I mean, if you showed this to me without the word kitsch, I don't think I would label it as kitsch at all. And yet it was one of the best-selling prints of the 20th century in the 1950s and 60s. And this dude was wealthy. I mean, he made a ton of money off of this one print. And that makes me think maybe that's why it's kitsch, just because it was so commercially successful.
Yeah, we have this comment from Darwin that says, it seems like kitsch art often comes from a commercial approach, like made for a mass consumer audience. I don't know if this was made for a mass consumer audience, but clearly, as we've been talking, it took that route and became, you know, consumed by the masses in print form and made this artist incredibly rich. So in my head, I do think that that was the route that turned this piece and thus the artist into falling under kitsch.
Strawberry Boar says, would you say kitsch is kind of campy? Well, there's a lot of words people use to describe kitsch. So campy is one of them. Ironic, decorative, lowbrow, tacky, cheesy, sappy, garish. Those are all words that people use to describe kitsch. But I don't know, sometimes kitsch is kind of awesome. Like I saw this website, Museum of Bad Art. I think it actually got started in Massachusetts. Some of this stuff is just hilarious. And it's so funny that I sort of don't care how badly it's painted.
I kind of love this piece. I mean, I also like this comment from Ion that says, I honestly think that kitsch is just sort of like a thing that people use to diminish fun art sometimes. And I think that could be valid too. I mean, I think I could go to this museum and have a ton of fun and leave with a lot of new favorite paintings. Like, I don't know. I think that sometimes, yeah, it does feel like a little bit of a snobby take on art.
Well, but the thing is, if we're talking about, okay, Vladimir Tretyakov sold all those prints and, oh, millions of people got it. How is that different than those blockbuster museum shows like Yayoi Kusama and Jeff Koons, who get so much press because of their work? I mean, one of them is selling prints, the other one is in a museum show, and yet the museum show is, quote, better or in better taste.
Right. So that's a great question. And my gut instinct is, I think it's all about marketing. You know, it's how the artist is marketed and how their team markets them, but also how, who is receiving their work. You know, I think with Jeff Koons and Yayoi, a lot of their publicity was like also like backed by celebrities and people who like influencers, like people whose taste a lot of people respect. Whereas when it's prints and it's being sold at garage sales, all of a sudden it's just your grandmother that likes this art all of a sudden, you know, and neither one can is better. It's generally, it's just the marketing of it all.
This is great. Cosmo Life says the tagline of the Museum of Bad Art is, quote, art too bad to be ignored. Isn't that what this is, though? This horrifying sculpture by Michael Jackson with a monkey? I mean, I don't think this is any different than stuff that we would see on that website. And it's sort of frustrating because I think what people are seeing here is that maybe it's just contextual. Maybe it's just where the art is. This art is in the Whitney. But you can say Thomas Kincaid is in my kid's bedroom, and therefore Thomas Kincaid is not as good. Do you think it's just where we see it?
Possibly, but I will say that even though Jeff Koons is in a museum, I'd say he still qualifies as kitsch. You know, like he is still a kitschy artist, but somehow he's made it to a platform of that being okay. Whereas I don't think we'd see Kincaid in a museum unless it's like, oh, he's been around for so long, let's do a retrospective on his work, you know, sentimentally. You know what I mean?
Sorting Lee says, in that case, Van Gogh is kitsch. Starry Night and Sunflowers prints are everywhere. That's a great point. Same thing with the Mona Lisa. But maybe the difference is that Van Gogh didn't authorize that. Like, he didn't make the work intending to put it on a mug. We put it on a mug later for him. Where somebody like Jeff Koons, he's still alive. He can totally dictate and does where his work goes. I mean, Thomas Kincaid is so interesting because he did his work. He displayed it in places that your, quote, typical artist would not. I mean, how many artists sold on the QVC home shopping network? And maybe that's what people said, oh, because it's on the home shopping network and not in the Whitney like Jeff Koons, it must be terrible.
Yeah, so it's more easily accessible in some ways. And if it's easily accessible or like easier to have in your home, obviously if something's on the home shopping network, you can probably buy it. But if something's at the Whitney, you probably can't buy it. And therefore, one is more sought after or cooler or higher brow than the other.
That makes me think that it's not just marketing, but maybe accessibility is part of it. I mean, Deepti, I'm an artist, okay? You're preaching to the choir if you want me to walk into a museum. But the last time I was in New York, an adult ticket to MoMA was $35. I was like, I'm not going for $35 because between me and my husband and my two kids, it's over $100 for a museum visit that my kids are going to complain about in about 30 minutes. And that's not accessible. Having a print that you can hang in your room and maybe you bought it for $15, that's accessible.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about accessibility. That's what Art Prof is all about. But yeah, you know, museums, I think that's a huge criticism of museums, especially stuff like the MoMA, like the Met, for example, which has like the Met Ball and, you know, has a lot of money coming in, but still charges a lot of money and isn't as accessible to like, you know, every person. It's a huge criticism of museums and galleries too, sometimes.
Jimmy Arca is asking, does the appropriation aspect of the art make it kitsch? I'm going to assume, Jimmy, you're talking about the Chinese girl image by Chechikov and that you're talking about cultural appropriation. I don't think so at all. I think you see a lot of pieces that have been accused of cultural appropriation that are not even close to kitsch. So I think cultural appropriation, that's a whole other can of worms. And sometimes it intersects with kitsch, other times it doesn't. So I think it's really separate. Now, Deepti, how about Margaret Keane?
Well, Margaret Keane, I think, has become more of a household name because of that film that was made, Big Eyes. I kind of like Margaret Keane's work. I mean, some of her work I don't love, but there are certain pieces where I'm kind of like obsessed with it. But again, like the Big Eyes, it's like a very cliche kind of way of drawing someone. But then again, who made that cliche? It's cliche because people are gravitate towards it, you know, and it's cute. But yeah, I kind of like Margaret's work.
Tell us in the chat, who here saw this film and what did you think of it? I never saw it, but when you read about her story, it's just horrifying. Basically, in a nutshell, her husband took credit for her paintings for years and years and years, and they were very commercially successful. And it wasn't until after they divorced that it came out that actually she had done all the paintings. And I'm so glad she did.
Austin made this comment. Do you think we'll see any Lisa Frank? She's like super kitschy in my mind. I think Lisa Frank is so kitschy, but obsessed. Like, I love Lisa Frank, you know? So again, so subjective. I know people who vomit at the thought of Lisa Frank, but again, so widely popular because it's so rainbow, cute animals. It's everything that's kitsch in a nutshell.
Yeah, but Deepti, you know what's really funny is when I was a kid, I was obsessed with Lisa Frank stickers. And I remember thinking about them as like treasures. Like I had this one Lisa Frank sticker that was of ballet shoes. I know exactly what it looks like. And I just thought it was the most beautiful picture on the planet. I wouldn't say that now, but it definitely had an impact on me as a kid. Like I know that image with every single line and color. It's in my head permanently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still am obsessed and I think they're kind of treasures, especially because you can't find it as commonly as you used to when at least I was a kid. It was always there, like back to school. And now I like never see Lisa Frank back to school. If I did, I probably would buy all of it so that if I ever have kids, I'd be like, you have to use this.
Like God's Little Artist says, Lisa Frank was my childhood. Cosma Life says, Lisa Frank is awesome. So nostalgic. I mean, she is very much an 80s icon in a way. I don't think she has the reach that she had in the 80s, but for a lot of us, we remember the impression that her images had on us as children. Mm-hmm. I'm the same way about Margaret Keane. I love this painting. I think this painting is creepy and strange, but also really sad and expressive. What do you think?
This one's probably one of my favorite ones. Also, the canvas size is really interesting to me. Like it's this weird horizontal aspect ratio, which is bizarre. The hands are so soft. Like, yeah, it reminds me of like an image you would see in a horror movie. But then also like, I want to give this little person a hug, you know? So it's so bizarre to me, but it's layered. And that makes me think like maybe kitsch work is kitsch because you look at it and you can't have a lot of conversation or thoughts or feelings towards it. Whereas like in this piece, maybe it's a little less kitschy because, or it's still kitsch, but it's a little bit elevated because we're able to create narratives through it. So perhaps that kind of like content and narrative aspect of the piece elevates kitsch art. Who knows?
Well, here's a comment from Christina who says, who is in charge of taste? No one. I love, quote, bad art. Margaret Keane, children's art, folk art, these are all real and allowed to exist. I think the issue here is that it can feel like certain people are in charge because some people have more visible voices than others. Like one thing that we were noticing is that Edward Hopper, who is a renowned artist in art history, he's been in a million museum shows. Nobody would ever, I think, dare to call Edward Hopper kitsch. And yet, I actually think that this painter, Jack Vetriano, who is known as a kitsch artist, is not that far off from Hopper. I mean, there's a lot of differences, don't get me wrong, but you have to admit that they're a little similar.
Yeah, I would say that they're similar. Like we were talking about the kind of use of interior spaces, lighting, the look into an intimate moment kind of way. But, you know, this artist, I think the main difference that I see is like the use of like beautiful women and the sexualization of women and like that kind of intimacy is used a lot more. And this artist and Hopper, we don't see that as much. So I wonder if that's, you know, a deciding factor. But then again, it might just all be marketing. But I do agree with that previous comment, like, who's to say? Who decides what's good taste? It's like being a popular kid in school. How did you become popular and decide everything is cool? You know, like who decides what?
HT Pokepack says, this kind of topic makes me think of gatekeeping. It's a huge problem in the art community. Exactly. Because you know something? the white cube gallery world is very much determined by 10 curators. They basically run the show. And if those curators don't put you in those shows, then you don't really exist. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't just put yourself in the MoMA or give yourself a Whitney show. And so it is largely up to a couple particular people, which I think is frustrating. All right, now we're going to go to our picks. And we're going to come back to Vladimir Tretyakov. These are some of his paintings. And you can see, like the other ones, are all these women who seem objectified. This is my opinion. You could disagree with me for sure. But DP, this is your, quote, bad pick by Tretyakov. Why did you pick this?
Yes. So this was my bad pick by this artist, because I feel like when I looked at this self-portrait of his, I feel like I've seen this self-portrait many times before. And I feel like there are a lot of cliches in it in the world of self-portraits. For example, the artist drawing himself with a paintbrush, the canvas is in there, he's looking straight at the audience, and then there's like a rainbow coming out of the head. Like all of that stuff kind of, we talk about in the cliche stream, like a lot of times cliches make you want to just like roll your eyes, that these things make me want to roll my eyes. But again, I'll say it's subjective. Some person might love this. Personally, I find also the way that he addressed, you know, his like skin being like very airbrushed. I mean, there are some wrinkles, but like everything feels a little like airbrushed and surface level to me. If I looked at this self-portrait, honestly, I couldn't tell you very much about who this artist is. You know, it doesn't feel like an actual look into who this artist is. I will say, I, in high school, made this probably exact same self-portrait of myself. So I will say that, you know, we've all been there, but I just think that this piece feels very kitschy to me because it feels like one of those pieces that when I was in high school, which maybe I would say that I was like a little less exposed and stuff, I would have looked at this and been like, wow, cool. And I probably did, you know? Who's to say? Again, High School Deep D had a valid opinion, but I do think things like the rainbows and the canvas and the piece and staring right into the camera, seeing the paintbrush, it all feels very staged. Very like been there, done that, and doesn't feel like there's any layer of depth to it. And I have a lot of other criticisms about the composition and the use of color and all of that, but I think that's why I think of it as kitschy and not like a well done kitsch piece. Again, my opinion.
Actually, Jordan had a drawing in his art school portfolio that was him drawing with a rainbow spilling out of his head because creativity and ideas pouring out of my head. I mean, how many people have not seen that before? So for me, the issue with the painting is more just that it's really cliche and not doing anything original. And it's not that well painted. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some interesting textures in the background, but again, I think also the like super saturated background versus the honest, like almost monochromatic foreground is also something I've seen before. You know, like my life is so drab, but my mind is so colorful. You know, like that. I did that too. You know, I walked this path, which I think is why I have criticism of it because I've done it. Yeah.
Ayane says, I haven't seen this kind of self-portrait very often, although the rainbow colors are somewhat kitsch in this scenario. I wonder if it's the rainbow, because a lot of people do inherently think about the rainbow as sort of a silly thing, which is so funny to me because I saw this incredible rainbow last week. It was after a storm. And if you see a real rainbow, there's nothing kitschy about it.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's like the heavens have opened. It's amazing. But then it's become a cliche because it's so amazing. Everyone wants to put it into their work now. But you know, in art prof, we do talk a lot about the importance of backgrounds. And sometimes I feel like what might make something kitschy, as we're talking about, that it is the use of slapping something objectively pleasing into the background just to put a background in there. In some of his previous work also, I was noticing the backgrounds just were like nice colors or patterns, but I was like, what is this? What am I looking at? You know? And I think that's why the background is important. It's a narrative tool. It's an element in your piece. And here it feels kitschy because it's like, okay, yeah, if you're in a gallery and you see a rainbow, obviously you're going to be like, oh my God, there's, you know, your eyes gravitate to that intense color.
Jessica says the rainbow is kind of gaudy and doesn't, quote, match the rest, if that makes sense. Oh, it absolutely does. From a formal point of view, if I just ignore the creativity spilling out of my head narrative, it just doesn't work within the same image. It's almost like there are three different paintings stylistically in the same piece. I mean, I can't help but evaluate the technique of a painting. That's the art nerd in me. But I also think all this other stuff we're talking about thematically is also very important. Okay, now this is your, quote, a good pick. Why do you like this piece?
I really like this piece because I think that compositionally it's interesting. I see these tools that he's used in other portraits of women that he's done where he gives them this weird bluish greenish skin tone coming in here, but it makes more sense here in a weird way. Like it actually feels like it's coming from a light source, which creates an interesting world that this person is in, given that there's a lack of background. I'm still kind of tapped into this strange universe. I think the lobsters are beautifully rendered. I find the skin really interesting. I find this person very interesting. And another thing I like is even though that the background really isn't being utilized, that texture and the color is being found in the fabric, in the bowl. You know, I see that coming in and out. It just feels like this artist spent more time here thinking about interesting ways to use the canvas, use color. The color palette is actually quite muted, but he uses color in a very interesting way that draws my eyes around the page. You know, I can spend time with this piece and find a lot of appreciation, not only technically, but also conceptually. And in some ways, I also don't feel like he's like the Chinese girl piece. I didn't have that same gut reaction where I was like, are you just trying to make this person look exotic? Like, did you just go into a country and, you know, pick someone and be like, oh, they look cool and different, so I'm going to paint them. This feels like, maybe that still was it, but it feels less like that and more of a, you know, really interesting observation and like creating something new and interesting.
Well, Rebecca brings up here, kitsch seems to lack subtlety. And I wonder if this is a good example because the self-portrait with the rainbow was not subtle. I mean, it was as loud as you could be, but this piece is subtle. It's subtle in terms of the muted color palette. And also the figure is a lot less on display. Maybe that's why we were feeling like the portraits of the women were objectified, because for me, the main spectacle of this painting is actually the crayfish. The female figure in the background almost feels like an accessory. And so there's a switch in terms of what people would expect to be the main event actually is not. Do you think subtlety is part of it?
I think so. I think subtlety is definitely part of it. And in some ways, when I think of subtlety, I think of just like allowing the audience to create their own narrative, or like not slapping us over the head with like context or too much information. And I think that's probably part of it.
Austin says his other works we've seen I liked, but they felt staged. This one feels, quote, real, like she's a person. Oh, it's a completely different atmosphere. I think it's a lot more humble. It doesn't seem as glamorous. And that, for me, I think is a pretty big difference in terms of story. Now, Maria says the crayfish one is kitsch. I can't see it. Here's the thing. You don't get labeled kitsch. You know, it's sort of like most people think about Vladimir Tretyakov as, didn't they call him the, quote, king of kitsch?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's because of that Chinese girl painting that he, or the prints and how well they did that he got that title.
So the thing is, it's not that this particular painting is labeled kitsch, but that the artist is labeled as a kitsch artist, and therefore everything he does, people tend to see it as kitsch. But that's why I think these picks are so interesting, that between one artist, you can have such a dramatic range of reactions. Because when you put this in the slideshow, DP, I was like, are you sure that's his?
I was also not sure, because compared to the self-portrait, it does in some ways feel like two completely different artists. And of course, they're probably made, I mean, I forget the time frame that they're made, but maybe he developed himself as an artist, was working on different things, experimenting, who knows? But yeah, you know, it was a big jump for me too. Even compared to his like portraits of, you know, beautiful women that we both were like having that weird gut reaction to, this feels very different.
All right. We have the painter of light, Thomas Kincaid. He's probably like Tretyakov, or more so than Tretyakov, at least for a contemporary artist, a lot better known. And if you're not familiar with Thomas Kincaid, a lot of his images are like these pastel colors. There are lots of highlights. And actually, I just noticed this, that there's very few people. And if there are people, they're pretty small. The images by Kincaid, they're mostly cottages and landscapes and pretty sunsets. That's pretty much what he's known for. He licenses stuff like crazy. There were even like full-out galleries that only carried his artwork. And I honestly can't think of any other contemporary artist that has that. So Deepti, do you think it's just people didn't like his marketing scheme?
Yeah, and I think what you were saying about how he sold his work on the Home Shopping Network, like it just made it kind of something that was so easily integrated into people's daily lives that they didn't see it as high art. I mean, it's kind of like when you start selling your work to your friends, you know, for like $10 or something, they'll never pay you $1,000 for your work anymore because you've been selling it for 10 and then you're kind of seen in that bracket. I think that might be Kincaid's issue too, is that like suddenly it was in a dentist's office and then you can never see it in a museum because it's in a dentist's office.
Well, so here Angie says, "Oy vey, Kincaid, my aunt and uncle have a house full of that junk." And yet Maria says, "Kincaid fan now, it was instantaneous." And yes, God's little artist, he did do some, I guess you would call it Disney crossover situations with his work. Now, see, this is interesting. Soyton Lee says here, "I don't mind the Kincaid works. I just don't like the idea of mass-produced artwork." And so that's what we are saying, that maybe it's not the image itself, but it's where is the image actually placed? Mm-hmm. All right, so this is my, quote, bad pick. And honestly, it's just a depth issue for me. I just feel like it's so flat. And I think if you're going to paint landscapes and outdoor spaces, you got to be good at depth. I don't care if it's abstract or super hyper realistic. I want a feeling of depth. Now, whether that matches the way depth looks in real life, I don't really care about that. But that barn in the background, first of all, it's so generic. The architecture does not work. I mean, it looks like it's made out of cardboard. And then all the stupid ducks, and they're just all look the same. I went to the aviary a couple months ago. Every duck is different. Come on. It looks like he had a rubber stamp and just stamped the ducks on the water. And so the lack of depth and just the generic quality of everything, just not cool, in my opinion. What do you think of this?
Yeah, for me, the ducks also really bother me for some reason. Like everything just feels too staged. And it feels like very like the lighting feels a little, even though there's some beautiful parts of the lighting on the grass and in the foreground, it just feels very like flat and staged to me. The colors are all so saturated. It really feels like I woke up in this like weird dream, but I feel uncomfortable. I don't know. Everything just feels like a little bit too fake and not like it's drawing from something real. I don't know. It honestly makes me feel a little disturbed when I look at this piece. I don't want to be there, I don't think.
No, I think this is almost like the Stepford Wives, where everything's too perfect and manicured to the point that it's creepy.
I like this comment from EG saying, "Consistent light source has lost the chat." I agree with that. Yeah, it does feel like just so bizarre in its lighting. It feels like it's a stage.
Which is sort of hilarious for somebody. Did he trademark Painter of Light? I think he did something with that, but that is his tagline, is he's the Painter of Light.
This comment is interesting. I didn't notice this, but the barn reflection in the pond is weird. Like, yeah, would that barn be reflected in the pond? Probably not, right? It's so far back. So again, it's a depth thing. Like, you know, it doesn't make sense because if the barn was that far away from the pond, I don't think it would be reflected.
Jimmy Arca is asking, did he paint from life? I don't have an answer for that, but I do feel that a lot of his work is very cookie cutter. I mean, it's the same tree in every painting. If he was painting from life, it was the same landscape that he was painting the whole time. And for me, that does get very boring very fast, because to me, the best artists are the ones who kept innovating and changing throughout their career. Kid Kane didn't really do that.
Yeah. I think that, his work feels somewhat repetitive and like stagnant, honestly. But it's, again, so loved by so many people. So maybe if you found something that works, why would you change it? I don't know.
Lisa says, but people love Kincaid. What do you think is the main attraction? I think it's a couple things. I think the colors are pretty and the imagery is not offensive in any way. It's not upsetting. And I think it's imagery that can be benign, if that makes any sense. Like, you ever listen to music and it's not very good music, and so you just stop hearing it? But it's fine, and you're not upset about that. It's sort of like this.
I mean, yeah, one thing that I think of when I think of Kincaid's work is that, like, it could be on a calendar, it could be on a wall, it could be a puzzle, it could be on a mug, it could be on a blanket, it could be on any of those things, and it would be fine. You know, it wouldn't be offensive, or it wouldn't feel out of place. So I think that's why people like it, because you can slap it on anything, and it's nice.
So Emily says, something you would put in a waiting room or hospital. Some people have mentioned cookie tin and the dentist office. I mean, if you're in the dentist office, I don't want to be looking at a Kathy Kollowitz lithograph. Like, that is not what I need when I'm sitting there. And I think Kincaid fills that role, because hotels, they've got big walls. They need to fill them with something. And it's probably not going to be a Kara Walker installation. This fills the space just fine. All right. This is my good pick. And I think what I noticed about this one, Deep D, is it's a lot more understated. There's just less stuff in this painting. Like, if we go back, we look at this, there's ducks, there's horses, there's a barn, there's a windmill, there's rocks. She's just packing it in so much in this painting. But then in this one, it's really just the gazebo. I mean, I guess there's the stairs and there's some landscape. But what I see first is light. The lighting is much more prominent than anything else. And while, yeah, I think it could be better, it's way better than this one, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. The lighting just makes more sense here. I think that also the lighting helps us focus on what we want to focus. Like you said, there was so much going on in that previous one. I just felt like I was darting around. Here, the lighting helps guide our eyes. And also there's a really nice atmospheric perspective and depth happening here. I love that background and that tree that, like, in the top left area that really, like, recedes into the space. And I think that color is really beautiful here. Everything doesn't feel so overly saturated like it did in the previous piece.
Yeah. And also, do you see how he actually gives you space to breathe in this painting? Because look at the whole upper section of the piece. Yes, he's hinting a little bit at the trees. But if we go back and we look at this one, there's like 10 trees back there that I can just count immediately. And then there's a whole landscape behind it. And this one, oddly enough, has less landscape, but to me feels like it has way more depth. Like, I feel like I could travel way, way further back there. And then this one, I also just think the value is not very good. The value range, if I were to turn this into a black and white image, it would be pretty gray. This one's got a great value range. I think it's very contrasty. The images pop, and I think that really helps landscape.
Definitely, I agree. Like, I think just from a technical aspect, there's so much more happening here, and I think a lot more thought put into it. And I think form is also really important, like the composition and the form and how things work together. I feel like it's more balanced than in the piece before, where I just felt like things were, like you said, stamped on, or everything felt a little disjointed. Whereas here, I really feel like it comes together as one cohesive piece.
Mills Gwimper says, I think a lot of people like it because it might be a safe, quiet, calm escape from their anxiety-induced life. I think that makes sense. I mean, that's why a lot of people don't like a lot of political artwork, because a lot of it's just not pretty. A lot of it makes you confront things that maybe you just don't feel like talking about. And with Kincaid, it's just not an issue. You just really do not have to worry about that.
Yeah, and I think also a lot of times we address art from the perspective of like being professional artists, and you know, we really pull things from it. But sometimes people just want to look at art because it's nice to look at and it's pretty and it makes them feel warm and fuzzy, and that's totally fine too. At Art Prof, we try and give it this like intense critique and a lot of thought, and that's what drives our opinions, but that's not everyone, and that's totally fine.
Jazz says it's the light on the grass around the gazebo that leads the eye in. That's the moment of light that I think is quintessential Thomas Kincaid, but that's very well done because you see him do that exact same patch of highlight on the grass that's shimmering. But for some reason, I like it better here. I think it's actually because, again, it's in moderation. He's not just throwing the stuff in your face, like light here and light there. It's just this one isolated area, and it just feels more special. And so I wonder if maybe with Kincaid, part of the kitsch is just the oversaturation, just that it's everywhere. You can't not see it. And maybe that's what makes it feel like kitsch.
Yeah. And then if it's everywhere, it's no longer special. Like you said, it's like, okay, well, you know, we're slapped on the head with it, so what makes it cool? But here, like you said, it does feel like novelty and it does feel special. Like you look at that little glimmer of light on the grass and you're like, ah, look at that, you know? And that's like where you get it and that's it. And you get to spend some time with it and it's like a nice moment.
Well, and I think that that's important to consider the quantity, because Vermeer painted like 5 paintings. I don't know exactly how many, but compared to somebody like Rembrandt and Picasso that just produced thousands and thousands of artwork, it's not hard to get a Picasso from a museum standpoint. Vermeer, it's like if you are a museum and you get a Vermeer, it's like, whoa, call the press. Everybody has to know we got that one Vermeer. It's a very big fuss. So I think Kincaid is the opposite of that. There's just so much of it that you just don't appreciate it anymore.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. We do have a couple other streams that address, quote, bad compositions. This one focuses on abstract painting. This one is on 2D compositions. And remember, our Google slideshows are available. They're great for review to get an overview of the whole video. The link is in the YouTube video description below and also on the new artprof.org, which you should check out. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. And in a few minutes, Deep D and I will be hanging out in the ArtProf Discord. We will be in the post live streams channel so we can chat more about patches of light and gazebos and rubber stamp ducks. Subscribe to our channel, like this video, leave us a comment, help us with those YouTube gods, because Deep D, we're at what, 99.4K subs?
We're yes, so close to 100K. I'm going to scream.
So close. Just give us that little nudge that we need to get off the edge. Because also, Deep D, look at this. We got 2 Patreon supporter slides and we got a blank one, the third slide. So who's going to be the first person to start this slide? We would really love
the first name on the third slide. I'm excited.
Everybody, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Bye.